Anybody, anywhere,
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson.
This pass caught by Paulson, the tight end.
And from 106.7 The Fan, Grant Paulson.
Welcome in to Take Command with Logan Paulson, who spent a decade in the NFL. I'm Grant Paulson. You can listen to me on 106.7 The Fan each and every day from 2 to 6.30. Of course, this is a video pod as well. You can watch us on YouTube on the 106.7 The Fan and Team 980 YouTube streams. Logan, we are closing in on being just 1 week away from the kickoff of the 2026 season. Massive year, year three for Adam Peters, Dan Quinn, and this regime.
Yeah, it's really funny kind of going through and like looking back at all the analysis we've given about this team. It really feels like kind of in the same rhythm as like a football game in a weird way, because like there's so much practice for football. There's such little game time. And all of a sudden we've done all this talking, all this studying, and then the game's right around the corner. We're going to actually have some real NFL football to talk about division battles, all those types of things. So it's going to be really exciting. And, you know, like right now it seems like everyone's kind of down on the team, and I'm kind of at a loss as to why that totally is, but you know, I'm excited for to see them get on the grass and you know, see what where this team's at. So
I want to double click on that. I kind of didn't plan on starting there, but when you say you think everyone's down on the team, I certainly think there are people questioning the offensive line, the center position, what have you. But I don't know. I mean, what are you basing that on to say everyone's down on them?
So I forget, you know, some publication just came out and said they're going to be the worst team in the NFL. Like, that just seems like such a drastic overreaction to a couple tweets from a joint practice and a third preseason game. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I still look at the roster, look at it on paper, compare it to last year, compare the coaches, compare what we've seen at training camp. And I'm like, it's not going to be that for sure. Like, could they have a tough year? Absolutely. But they're definitely not going to be the worst team in the NFL. Like, that just seems that seems like an insane take to me.
I agree with you. I think that's ridiculous. The only person I saw say that, and I'm not trying to take a shot at him, was Mike Tenier, who used to work, I think, years ago at Bleacher Report. And he's kind of doing this thing for this, like, podcast and Substack kind of deal. So I don't know how, like, I don't think reputable ESPN.
He's not CBS, super locked like, in.
I think that's one guy's take. And I'm not saying
I thought it was. Yeah, I guess maybe I associated with Bleacher Report. But yeah, I got you.
But that having been said, to your point, like there was a predictive graphic that came out where all the NFL media people, like the NFL Network folks, put out their week one predictions or whatever. And it's a clean sweep 10 for 10 that the Eagles are going to beat the Commanders. And it's a lot of like 30 to 10 predictions. So I'm not trying to push back completely in the sense that I think the momentum has not been great, like publicly. Yeah. And it certainly does feel like, cause I'm trying to wrap my head around this too. Like I keep saying the discourse to me doesn't really match what's on the field in the first week. Cause it's a lot of, like we disagree a little bit about center on the last pod, whatever, but it's a lot of like, if this doesn't work, then like people are worried about center. Well, right now, Nick Allegretti's your starting center. And most people are not panicking about Allegretti. We could have a conversation that I think would be reasonable enough about, are they right? This guy's never been a starting center in the league, really. They've chosen him. Like, I think that's a normal discussion going into a season. But you're right. It does feel like, in about a 2 or 3 week span, like the best I've felt about this team in a long, 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 long time was right after the Stephon Diggs addition, right before the Laremy Tunsil injury. And if you look at like post that joint Dolphins practice or whatever, when they just whooped their butt all over the field, to like right now, it feels like the stock has fallen off completely. And maybe the value is good to buy on right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what that's what I feel like. That same exact timeline, because you're like, man, it never has been higher. And obviously the Laremy Tunsil injury is a big one and it affects the team. But I'm just kind of at a little bit at a loss as to why it got so negative. I mean, I understand, but, you know, because again, the joint practice, the stuff coming out of there wasn't great. But there's context there, and I think teams are getting healthy. And I went back and watched basically the offensive line over the last four games last year, kind of looking at Allegretti, because, you know, we've talked about him a lot, but just to kind of refresh myself. And I'm like, he's doing some good stuff. Like, is he the best center in the league? No. But is he a serviceable starter? Yes. And so I think, like, you know, obviously you need guys to ascend. Connerly needs to take a step. I think Coleman is kind of poised for a big year. The more I watch him, the more I've watched him in practice, I think people are sleeping on how good he is looking at the moment. And then I think Cosme is ready for to kind of be the Cosme he was from 2 years ago, like when he was kind of playing at that Pro Bowl level. So again, to your point, I think it's a valid point. Like if something were to happen, like an injury happens, like can they sustain it? It's going to be difficult, but that's true for most teams, right? So like all of a sudden, like why is the dialogue like that they're going to be, you know, a bottom half of the league type team? I'm not sure I'm there with it yet, especially because of what I've seen from Jaden Daniels. And again, as we know, quarterback's the most important position in sports, and what I've seen from the defense.
Yeah, totally. So here's what I would say to you to play devil's advocate for a second, because I think what you're saying makes sense, but to try to describe, you're like, I don't really get it. Here's, I think, what the fan is thinking. First of all, you talked about what you've seen. You've seen a lot more than 99% of the people that are talking. You're at practices. You see him lighting it up in this offense. You've seen more of the defensive scheme than anybody else in terms of fans at home have seen. And that's the thing, like the team, I'm not saying they're miffed or bothered. I'm sure to some extent, AP or DQ are like, man, we're not getting any respect to what's going on. Well, you can't show us nothing and then be upset that we don't have a whole lot of confidence. Like, you don't get to do both. You've elected this path, which is you had a whole August. You could have gone full Steve Spurrier in Osaka. You could have come out here running flea flickers and hooking ladders and put up 40. You didn't do that. You did the opposite. But I guess if I'm someone sitting at home, I think generally fans are more results-oriented than process-oriented anyway.
Sure.
Right? You're programmed like a player for many years where it's about the Monday through Saturday part of it. So that's number one. But number two, what have they seen over the last couple of weeks where we're talking about? Reports of them getting their teeth kicked in a joint practice. A three-snap sample that was kind of disastrous in Detroit. Now, we've explained it and contextualized it, but they don't care about that. They saw three plays with a sack, a pressure, and a give-up draw. So
that, not inspiring a lot of confidence there.
That's what this group elected to show you from a starting standpoint this year. So I totally understand why the confidence is really low, to be honest with you. I just think the Adam Peters comment from his press conference is a great way to look at this. You guys haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah.
Right? Now, that comment could come back to haunt him, right? Because you got to play football and win and look good. But that is accurate to say they have chosen not to show you anything. It would be the equivalent of like, you're a teacher. And every time in class you allot 20 minutes for a kid to work on a project, they're like, nah, I'm good. I'm good. I got a lot. I'm pretty far along in this already. It would be reasonable for you to go, I don't know what kind of work they're going to be turning in here. And the student's like, no. When I'm at home, the stuff you don't get to see, don't worry, dude. You won't even believe how much good work I've done. I'm not even showing you my project yet. That's what's happening.
No, I'm with you. So I get that. That is abundantly clear to me. The one that I'm having a hard time with is when I talk to people on the beat who are here, who get to watch practice. Like, that's the one that I like that are kind of perpetuating some of this stuff. And because, like, you've been at practice, like the defense looks sharp, man. It looks really, really sharp. It looks problematic. Front spacings, pressures, like, but it's all there.
Is the defense going to have Owe? And Chaisson came back to practice, so that's a big deal yesterday.
Yeah.
But you're talking about what they've been saying. I didn't feel as good about the defense a week ago. If you're telling me it's Joshua Josephs who bit, like, I bite a candy bar on a read option for a 50-yard touchdown from a quarterback.
That's a good pull by you. You should have said cannoli. It would have been better.
Well, I don't even eat candy bars, which is, whether believe it or not, I don't think I've ever eaten a candy bar. A Kit Kat. How about that? I'm not
a
caramel guy.
Candy bar? What?
Yeah, I'm out on candy bars completely.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm a pretty healthy guy, and I've had a candy bar here and there every once in a while. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I'm as least healthy as you could possibly be, and I never have had a candy bar. It's like if you gave me three king size candy bars to choose from, I'd be like, nah, I'm good, man. Thanks.
Wow. Cookies though. Every once in a while, I'll be at like there's a cookie set up in the office, you know what I mean? Like in the cafeteria downstairs, and it's free cookies. And I think about your story when you went on your honeymoon and you were just crabbing cookies and they called you the cookie monster. I think about that every once in a while. So it is a little bit of a departure to be thinking about, you know, not eating candy bars and like overdosing. No,
if you make a tray of brownies and you leave it out with me around.
Why? You're like my dog. That thing's getting,
you're counter surfing that tomorrow.
That thing's gone.
like when my wife or my kids bake something at the house, they'll literally be like, "Dad, don't eat them all," kind of thing. You know, like, and it's like, why would you say that to me? That's not a cool thing to say to me. Yeah. But I guess at some point they have this PTSD of me eating all of their cookies or brownies or something because they're saying it. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I mean, if it's Joseph's and remember Armstrong suspended, Jason just came back to practice. It sounds to me right now like, oh, wait, at best is 50-50. We'll get a better idea next week. But that's a different thing to me. Like, I'm counting on pressure saving the corners because the corners I don't think are a strength.
No,
well, now if I'm not getting the same pressure. So I could see where someone would be a little bit nervous about the defense. The other thing I always say, too, and I'm not saying you're doing this, but I've talked to Commanders fans for a long time on the radio about this, and they're always like, why don't people think we're going to be better? Or like, where is the respect? And it's like, the team finished 5-12 last year.
So
they had a lot of injuries, but it's not like they're coming off 12-5.
So I guess what I'm saying is like, I don't think they're going to go undefeated. I'm not saying that, I don't think they're going to be the worst team in the league. Like there's definitely a discrepancy there.
Also, and you know what people sleep on? Nobody's talking about the fact that Jaden Daniels is really good,
dude. That's the part that's
crazy to me.
And I keep coming back to that. And you and I have talked about this offline a little bit. Like this is the, and again, I don't want to overhype, don't want to put like unrealistic expectations on him, but it's the best he's looked here in Washington, like just throwing the football. And again, like you got to protect him, you got to do all those things. But like in terms of like watching him in practice, his ability to check into the right play, like get the ball where it's got to be on time, like all those things that are like, you know, the things that you like about Kirk Cousins, where it's like on time, on schedule, good footwork, and like, he looks like that. And then all of a sudden you'll see Adafe Owe on a free rush and he'll spin out of there. And Adafe Owe runs a 4-3 and he outruns him and then completes the ball down the sideline. You're like, there's only like a handful of people on the planet that can do that. And so he's kind of walking this weird space of doing the pocket stuff really well and then the athletic freak stuff very well. So I think, again, maybe I'm optimistic because I'm so excited to watch him play. And I'm so excited to see Durante Jones just like unleash the hounds because like, the pressure stuff that they're doing, even if you don't have great rushers, mathematically from a protection standpoint, just makes it hard on the offense. And so we have seen the most tepid version of this thing. And I just want to see it go. It's going to be crazy, crazy fronts, crazy blitzes. We're going to get Frankie Louvu murdering guards for four quarters of football in Philly. Like that's exciting to me. So again, like it's, you're right, 100%. It's people haven't seen it, and I totally empathize with that, and I should be more empathetic to that probably outwardly. But again, man, they have like these two aces like in the hand, right? And it's like one is the quarterback, and one is this scheme, which I have a lot of confidence in defensively.
Totally with you on that, and I think I try to remind myself now. It's a lot of pressure on Daniels, and he's got to look like he did in 24, and. Frankly, he's got to look like he has on the practice field, but he's got more talent around him too. Like we have not seen a target to Terry McLaurin, a throw to Stephon Diggs. You know, we haven't seen those guys really on the field. So there's just so much more in the tank. I certainly am hopeful and optimistic about that. I keep bringing up the Durante Jones thing and the scheme and that they haven't seen it. Let me ask you this, because I was thinking about this the other day. Somebody actually, a listener sent me this, and I was like, yeah, that's a good point. The Eagles have done a really nice job against the Vikings over the last couple of years. I want to say Philly has scored 28 and 28 points over the last two times they played. Maybe it was even 34 points in one of those games. I have to look back. But they've had a lot of success. Now, it was a different Eagles offensive scheme than the one they're running, and it's a first-time coordinator. Is your confidence when you keep talking about like week one, maybe – you know, given the Eagles fits or whatever, like even Flores, who's the guy that taught Durante Jones with this defense kind of mastered in Minnesota where it's been really good, has not done a great job against the Eagles. Is the fact that you're so confident for week one that they haven't seen this version and you think there's different elements of it? Like maybe not he's going to run it better than Flores, but he'll run it differently so they don't know what is coming kind of thing.
Yeah, so a couple things here. Like I went back because obviously Mannion, is that his name? Sean Mannion is
Sean
from
Mannion.
The OC. He's from Green Bay. Their run game coordinator's from Green Bay. Their offensive line coach spent some time in Minnesota. And so like I went back and I was like, how did Green Bay play them? And I thought the thing about Green Bay, because there's familiarity there, they've seen that Flores defense a bunch, right, is they did a really good job with their protection plan of like not buying, like not biting the cheese, like not taking the cheese, right, to like, for like a good analogy, right? So like you do all this stuff schematically to basically isolate the man side of the protection, the zone side of the protection. They were like, bump it. We're just going to go full slide. We're going to chip to the slide side, and we're going to put the back on a defensive end if he comes, and he's going to cut him down, and the ball's got to get out. And so I thought they did have a Green Bay, I'm talking about, when Sean Mannion was there, did have a good plan for some of the more exotic stuff. The one thing that, again, going back and watching that film of Green Bay, that kind of got me a little bit nervous, to be quite honest, is when you look at what Green Bay did, they were really incredibly efficient on first and second down, running the football, quick game, play action, like, right? Very, very efficient with that stuff. And I'm not saying like big explosive plays, but I'm saying they were in a lot of like second and fours, second and fives. And because they ran the ball so well, the back got downhill, the offensive line moved the spot. They didn't have anybody in the middle of that defense. I'm talking about Minnesota now, to kind of anchor. And so when I look at Philadelphia, like, what's the superpower of that team? I mean, that O-line for Philadelphia is banged up a little bit, right? But they still have absolute units in that thing, right? They've got Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson. They've got a very good center. They've got Steen at the right guard, who's a good run-blocking player, and Lane Johnson, who I think is still a stud, even though he's going to retire this year. Like, if that group gets going and they understand schematically what this Green Bay offense, Sean Mannion offense is in Philadelphia, and they can run the ball efficiently. Like, I went back and looked, and like the amount of pressure on Jordan Love versus Minnesota was basically like four plays. And so the whole thing that I was thinking about is like, can you put Jalen Hurts in a position where he's got to like win this thing, like down to down? And to do that, you got to win first and second down. And obviously, I think Tim Settle's a great addition. He's going to help with that a ton. But can you win on those early downs so that you can bring, you know, this nuclear option here in terms of pressure? So
I want to talk about that. And frankly, one thing that I think we haven't covered, just making sure we've hit all our bases before the season, how do we feel like this team's going to stop the run? Because I think it's going to be pertinent to them doing what they want to do from a pass rushing standpoint. We'll get into that next on Take Command. Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, Take Command. So, Logan, one of the phrases I heard a couple times this offseason on some of the things that I listened to and read, which I really liked, was you got to stop the run to have your fun, right? And it's like, it's not as simplified anymore as first and second down, stop the run, third down pass, because these smart coaches and coordinators in this league are throwing mostly out of play action on drops on first and 10. But that having been said, you get the idea. Like, you got to eat your vegetables a little bit. And you're not going to be there aren't great pass rushing teams that are terrible at stopping the run, because you're just not in enough of those obvious down and distances. Your best friend for your pass rush is going to be setting up third and long or a obvious passing down, second and 12 or whatever. So I bring this up to say, in the preseason, and again, we're working off results mostly that are not relevant fully, but this team did not stop the run very well. They did stop the run very well against the Dolphins in the joint practice. That's a long time ago now. Not as well maybe against the Ravens. But I ask you, how do you feel about that group? Newton's hurt. That was a real struggle for him anyway.
Yeah.
Tim Settle, Javon Kinlaw, Daron Payne, Charles Omenihu, Shai Tuttle, Ricky Barber, the big size up front guys. What kind of expectations do you have?
So, yeah, I think this is going to be something that's really compelling, because we haven't really seen Tim Settle on the field, but I'm going back to when he was in Houston and when he was healthy. Like, he's a really good nose guard. And so, like, his ability, like, you know, Fletch talked about it on the broadcast we did in the Detroit game, or the Baltimore game, excuse me, because he played in that game a little bit. His ability to stay square, own a double team, and let guys free run to the ball is pretty interesting. So, like, I actually thought Kane Medrano and Ale Kaho played pretty well when he was in, because there's just free access to the ball. Now they got to make the tackle and get the guy down, all those types of things. But I do think that that piece in the middle there is really important. And I, you know, we're talking about a free agent nose guard acquisition, but I think that's good. And what I think it does that's really important is it means that Daron Payne does not have to play the nose, and he can play a 4-eye in this defense or a 3 technique if they get in their 6-2 spacing. And then Kinlaw can also do the same thing. And you've got two guys there in Duran and Kinlaw that do it different ways, but they can definitely win a one-on-one in that environment. I don't think you want Kinlaw playing the nose. He did that for a little bit in his career. I don't think he was very successful at it. But as a four-eye, you know, wide three technique, like that, Tim Settle being here makes those two football players better.
Why is Kinlaw better as a four-eye or a five-tech?
Because I think he's kind of got these like long angular kind of hips. And so when you're in a wide three in most outside zones, you're in a one-on-one block with the guard. So it's like, hey, Kinlaw, like, remember like Jason Hatcher? Remember him, Jason?
97. Jason. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Former Cowboy came to Washington.
So he kind of plays in a similar way, I think, to Kinlaw. He's a little high cut, pads get a little high. But the thing that he's really good at is like when he gets that reach by like reach from a three technique, he can destroy that thing. And I want him in that position as much as possible, right? And again, if you're a four eye, if you're like a little bit wider and they're running a power scheme, like I can play into the shoulder of the tackle, the guard can't get a piece, and then I can win that. So basically by spacing, he's getting more single block work. And the other thing about this defense that I think it's important is when you get Frankie Louvu off the ball, the one thing about Frankie Louvu, like one of the strengths of his game, in my opinion, is his ability to play downhill. So like when you talk to Fletch, one of the things he's always talking about in terms of stopping the run, it's like, how is the linebacker, not the defensive tackle, the linebacker playing the double? And Frankie's very good at that. So I do think you're going to get on paper. Now, again, this is all hypothetical. This is chalk talk. This is, you know, we haven't really seen this. We saw it versus Miami and it looked amazing, right? But Frankie Louvu downhill, Leo Chenal downhill, Sonny Styles downhill, Nick Cross in the box playing eight-man fronts, like, that's kind of what I see, and I think it elevates those three guys on the interior because of how, again, aggressive they can be going and attacking the football.
As far as the edges, because I always find that to be one of the more underrated things now because everyone's got their, oh, this is a pass rusher. This is a rundown guy. You know, Dietrich Wise is still on PUP, got hurt in week two last year on that Thursday night game against the Packers, so you kind of wonder when we see him again. But from a you know, outside backer, edge standpoint, Owe, Josephs, Caleb on Chason, Javonte Jean-Baptiste. How do you see Dorrance Armstrong suspended, but he'll be back. What's the pecking order in terms of ability against the run of those guys?
It's going to sound crazy because I think a lot of people don't think of him this way, but I think Adafe Owe is the best player against the run. Like when you watched him last year against the Chargers, like I was like, this guy's the guy that's supposed to be like the pass rusher. Like, again, he has dynamic, but when you watch his run cut up, you're like, this dude is strong and snappy. Like, there was a G lead versus Houston where they're pulling the play side guard to kick him out. The tight end blocks down. They're trying to kick him out. And he hits this guy so damn hard. I think that guard's like 340 pounds. He, like, lifts him off his feet, extends his hands, and the guard's, like, falling into the runner, and he ends up making the tackle. So, like, he's not like a – he reminds me a little bit of DeMarcus Ware in terms of build, like this long, like you're like, is that a receiver? Because he's kind of long, really lithe, very lean, but he plays with great length and great strength. And I think that length, when you have players that can play with their length like that, it becomes really problematic for blockers. So I would probably put him at number one, to be quite honest. And then I think you got to think about the defensive spacing here. Like when you look at Minnesota, there's one guy of these edge players that's playing like a true defensive end by spacing. So he's like an end. And then there's like a three technique next to him. With Caleb on Chason, with Joshua Josephs, with Sonny Style, whoever you want to put in here, right? Basically, they're playing like a perimeter player. They're playing like outside the formation, and someone else is going to play a five or a six technique. And when you get that person kind of outside like that, it's just a crash down, kind of bloody the nose, dent the edge of the defense so you can't stretch it. So versus Miami, for example, Joshua Josephs isn't a big man, but he just kamikazes that tackle or that tight end to the field, and like there's nowhere for the ball to go because
so they're not out there for contain. They're basically doing the opposite. They're trying to blow things up off tackle.
Well, yeah, I mean you're containing through the violent collision, right? You're basically like saying so. Like people can't see my hands, but like the way outside zone works is that I have to stretch so the back can stretch. The second that this first blocker stops, the back has nowhere to stretch, right? Same thing on power. So we're going to down block, and then we're going to try and kick this player. If you dent this guard, the back has nowhere to go. He has to bounce to an unblocked player. So that's why, like, getting a player like that that has that kind of speed and juice and physical violence. Caleb on Chase on plays the same way in that role. I think elevates them as run players for sure.
Yeah, you put a tackle on skates and all of a sudden that play dies because you're trying to get him out in space to the edge. So then maybe that's your ideal too. Chaisson, to me, I feel like is a pass rushing ace. Is that about right?
So it's interesting. I actually think he's a little bit better in this role because think of him, don't think of him as an edge rusher. Think of him as a linebacker, right? And the guy that has like some on ball, off ball ability. And then obviously he has 10 sacks, 11 sacks last year. He's not winning the same way like Adafeo is winning, but he does have this kind of lithe bend. I can win on a stunt. I can get my shoulders nice and low on a ghost rush. Like I don't have great power because I'm not a big man, but I have these other tools in the bag that allow me to be effective. I think about him rushing with like Kinlaw, for example, like where you get a good penetrating three technique or four eye up the field into the hip of that tackle. And then you get, they both kind of have to double him. He can loop around kind of like the old Justin Smith, Alden Smith connection up in San Francisco, right? Like where Alden Smith wasn't a great technical rusher, but it worked really well because he ran those games and stunts with Justin Smith so well.
Logan Paulson, Grant Paulson, take command. I want to answer some of your listener questions that came in our final episode of our final non-game week. We'll get into the rhythms of a normal week looking ahead to the Philadelphia Eagles starting on Monday. First of three episodes as we close in on the matchup in week one to kick off NFC East play. It's a gauntlet early. Eagles, Cowboys, Seahawks in the first 3 weeks, and then to London to take on the Colts to round out the first quarter or so of the season. You're listening to Take Command. He's Logan Paulson. I'm Grant Paulson. This is Take Command. Please remember to subscribe, rate, review, leave a comment, do all of those types of things that help us out with this podcast. Also, the thing you can do the most helpful for us would be to spread the word. Get more listeners for us. Get your buddies in the Commanders group chat to check us out. We want to keep growing this thing. We're doing it 3 days a week all football season. All right, Logan, here's a question that I found interesting from somebody. They said, do the players pay any attention to things like preseason power rankings? Does this add any additional motivation, or do they not care about what people are saying outside the building?
Good question. Everybody kind of handles it a little bit differently. So like as a player, I didn't have social media. I didn't really study that, didn't look into that because I just found it to be stressful. But I've been on teams where coaches have like brought something in if they thought the team could handle it and be like, hey, you know, like this is what the league thinks about us at the moment. And, you know, this is a competitive environment with a bunch of competitive dudes, and they sometimes respond really well to that.
Who do you remember doing that, and, like, what would they do? Would it be, like, just a prediction for the upcoming game or your pick to be 29th? Like, what would it be?
Yeah, it'd be, like, I remember it more, like, preseason, you know, like, like before, like, obviously, like, not during, like, actual preseason football, but in that week leading up where it's like, hey, man, this is what teams are thinking about us, and we have an opportunity to kind of change that narrative. I want to say it was a long time ago. I think Mike did it once, and I think Dan would never do that, but it was somebody like that. Maybe Kyle when I was in San Francisco, but something like that where they just like, it's not a big, you know, hoopla. It's not like, hey man, this should piss you off. It's like, hey, just some information for you guys. You know, hey, this is what people think. And then guys get like,
you don't think DQ's doing it though?
He doesn't like to do that. When I was with him, he didn't like to do that kind of stuff. Like he is very about the team in the room. Like there's a focus, they're, you know, process oriented kind of perspective there, which I really appreciated as a player. Like, and he, you know, he would show film of us, he'd kind of talk about things like da 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 da, but like, you know, us against the world is a big thing for him. But yeah, he would not, at least in, I don't remember him doing that when I was in Atlanta. He might have, but I don't remember.
This guy sends us a question from Scotland to say, hey, Grant and Logan. Not sure if this is a mailbag topic, but I have not heard a ton about Daron Payne and Jordan McGee throughout camp. Mm. How are they looking? As I think both need a big year for very different reasons. Now, McGee has not been healthy down the stretch of camp, so that's probably why it was a little quiet on his front. You know, when he plays, he's going to be on special teams. I think it's going to be hard for him to get on the field early this season defensively just because you're using two linebackers a lot. You drafted Sonny Styles. You spent on Leo Chenal. You've got Frankie Luvu. So, I mean, he's number four where you're using two effectively. So if everyone's healthy, it's mostly teams for him. But Daron Payne is interesting because he's a guy that, frankly, I did not think was going to be on the roster at the price tag he's on the roster at going into the offseason. I thought they'd either do some type of an extension where they rework it or, you know, maybe he would just not be around anymore. But they basically said, you know, cap number of close to $28 million, no problem. Like, we'll pay you like you're an elite D tackle. What did you see from him this summer?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like all those defensive tackles, they kind of had moments and splashes, you know, like we talked about Tim Settle in the Baltimore game. We talked about Kinlaw in one-on-ones and sometimes in team, he just does stuff. You're like, ugh, like I don't want to be that guard. Like that's gross. I think there's a quiet consistency to how Payne plays, right? Like he's in his right gap. And, you know, obviously there's splash moments for him, but I do think there's a high, he strikes me in this training camp as a very high floor type player. I'm going to be where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. And this defense naturally allows plays to come to that position just kind of through like, you know, kind of flotsam, jetsam, like there's trash coming to him a little bit. And I think that's kind of how he's played this summer, which is great. You know, like that's what you need. I think that's what that position in this defense requires. We talked about Tim Settle. We talked about, again, I think Daron Payne's in a similar bucket, in my opinion, with a little bit more pass rush upside. So, again, I think solid floor for him. And I'm just curious what this defense unlocks for him in terms of ceiling this year.
Yeah, I look at the highest paid players on the team in terms of cap number. And Payne is number one at $27.9 million. That's a massive number.
Wouldn't that be nice, huh? That'd be nice.
That would be nice. I go back to remember the Titans and Coach Yost talking to Petey, the cornerback. You want to be a star, you better give me a star effort. I'm paying you $28 million. Like, solid, quietly doing the right thing ain't good enough. I need DFLs. I need sacks. I need hits that lead to turnovers. I mean, I need big-time plays. And that's not that fair or fun to say, but, like, it's just reality, man. That's a huge – no one on the team makes more than you against Mike App. I need you to be a superstar. And that wasn't the case last year. Now, to a lesser extent, you could say the same thing about Javon Kinlaw because he's the fourth highest paid player on the team at $16.2 million against the cap. So you're talking about $44 million in two D tackles here who were both kind of quiet, I would say underachieved a little bit last year in a down year for the team. And that just can't happen. Now, it's a different scheme. Different things are asked. It's not all about counting stats. I understand all that. But you can't be getting a run on, and those guys can't go games where you're not noticing them when I'm combining to pay them almost $50 million.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And again, I'm kind of more commenting on their training camp so far, but I understand what you want to see from them for the season. And I do think there will be opportunities for them. And I think about Kinlaw last year, like his splash moments were big. But again, you probably want him down to down to be a little bit more consistent, right? And Payne's kind of the other way. You kind of want to turn up the fader and maybe we can be more aggressive in certain moments as opposed to kind of doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing all the time. So I think like that'll be really cool. Talk about things you're looking forward to in the season. Like that's one of them, right? Is like, where do those guys fall on the spectrum in terms of impact players in this defense? We've talked about the edges. I mean, their impact just seems like so apparent in your face. The linebackers, I think I can't wait to watch Frankie Luvu play football. To me, it's more – those guys are a little bit more of a question because when you look at Minnesota's defense, they never had anybody as talented as those guys. So do you kind of change the paradigm here? Do you emphasize things a little bit differently because you've got guys on the interior that are – like I bumped into Payne in the cafeteria the other day. Like he is just a uniquely built human being.
He's
like,
huge.
6'4", he's 330, but he's like kind of lean. He's like well-muscled. And watching him move around on the field, like – My favorite memory of him in practice is like there's a keeper and he like reads out of it really well and he's like running down Marcus Mariota like on the sideline. Like he's like running flat down the line and he's gonna make the tackle, you know, at the line of scrimmage. And I'm like, there's only a couple guys on the planet that can do that kind of stuff. And so is that potential for those explosive opportunities there? 1,000%. I'm just curious to see how this system helps him. And what we get from both those guys, I think it's a really compelling question. And I'm glad you framed it that way, Grant, because I do think they have shown and they are talented enough to be very productive. It's just like, what level of production do you end up getting?
So this question's interesting. I don't know if this is specifically just based on a matchup, but I think he's more talking about the general schemes here. He says, do you agree that Ben Johnson has dominated Brian Flores because Flores is four deep, palms coverage, stresses middle linebackers, while Johnson uses heavy play action, 6 to 7 man protections to create linebacker missteps and open middle crossers? He says, does having Sonny Styles help counteract this? So it's like a very specific thing about a couple matchups a year in the NFC North. But I guess more largely, you could talk philosophically about, you know, what Johnson's trying to do, what Flores is trying to do. Is that accurate to say that's a hole in this thing and maybe that's where Sonny Styles comes in or what?
I think that's a fair – so that's an interesting way to characterize that. Like, I always think of Palms coverages as stressing the safeties probably more, and obviously the linebackers are in a
difficult – Describe Palms coverage real quick for people that don't know.
So Palms coverage is like – think about like you're on Madden, you got your quarters across the back, those like four circles, right? And so like obviously the weak spot with those four circles on the back is that you don't have any flat defender. Or if the flat defender is pushing out, you don't have any hook player. So one of the ways that people have kind of compensated for that is you basically take – the safety and the corner to the same side, and you have them read the number two receiver. So like, you know, that could be a tight end, that could be a slot. So the second the receiver stems out, the outside corner in this quarters look takes him, bites him, and then it becomes basically cover two. So it's this coverage that can kind of morph very quickly between quarters and then cover two, essentially. I'm bastardizing the rules here a little bit. I'm sure, like, you know, Palm stands like who are on these coaching forums are going to get mad at me for saying it that way. But that's basically what it comes down to if you're looking at it from an offensive perspective. So you get protection from vertical route concepts, but you also get protection from that kind of quick out there. So I think it stresses those guys a little bit more. And that's one of the reasons why the protection is so important, because the second you elongate the down, like, let's say, you know, like, because it basically becomes cover two, right? And let's say I can pass protect the pressure you're bringing. If I take that number one receiver and run a dig, like basically I get my number one receiver on a safety who's pushing off the hash. So there's this huge void there. But again, like you don't feel that in this defense because the pressure gets home. So like the quarterback can't go from one to two, from that number two running an out to the dig quick enough to make you really pay for it. So that's part of it. So the reason I think Ben Johnson is so good at what he does, and when you talk to people around the league about Ben Johnson, the thing that comes up is he's an excellent run game coordinator, which I don't think is a coincidence, because one of the things that I think people sleep on with Kyle, they sleep on with Mike, they sleep on with Matt, they sleep on with Sean, all these guys that are kind of from this Mike Shanahan coaching tree, is they understand how to coordinate a running game. And so people say, why is that important? It's important because of this. When Detroit plays Minnesota, they're able to run the football versus a myriad of pressures and a myriad of fronts. So last year, for example, this is a really good, I'm really glad this question came up. Last year, Minnesota brought a ton of cross dog and they isolated Jahmyr Gibbs in pass protection situations. They were, and because of the cross dog and how it attacked the gap seam runs, Detroit Lions weren't able to run and they weren't able to throw the football and they ended up losing that game. So to me, when Ben Johnson left, they kind of lost all of these little levers and strings to pull to maximize the blocking surface to run the football where we can then set up play action. So like, that's what I'd say. I'd say your ability to, so in terms of like, the question was like Ben Johnson versus Brian Flores, correct?
Yeah, but would Sonny Styles or a player like him kind of be the antidote?
I don't think so. To me, it's more the scheme. Like the second the scheme took a step back in Detroit from a run game standpoint, all these little like tweaks and pulls, like, well, we're going to run a cross dog. Does anyone know the two linebackers' names in Minnesota? No. But because of how we're patterning it, we're getting free runners to the ball. You know what I mean? And so I think like that's, and because there isn't a guy there like Ben Johnson, like a Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, who can think of a solution to that, We can't run the ball. Now our play action game's dead. Now our keeper game's dead. And we're sitting here trying to throw a drop back, which is not a good way to be living. So will Sonny Styles help because he's a freak athlete? Absolutely. But I do think it's more schematic run game stuff is the thing that makes Ben Johnson that elite play caller.
Makes sense. Looking forward to next week and breaking down the Eagles game from a million angles throughout the week on our three episodes. But speaking of which, we could turn the page to Philly to end the podcast here because I got a listener question. And by the way, we're running low on our mailbag questions. So send them in at Grant H. Paulson on Instagram, Grant Paulson on Twitter, Of course, you could send them to wherever you listen to these pods in the comments section. Logan on social. We'll try to get as many of them put together on this document as we can. But this one was from training camp, and I kind of saved it closer to week one. So this guy goes, hey, Grant, Nickelodeon, which is always good.
Love it.
He's a real one. He says, I wanted to write in a Take Command mailbag question that's different than the normal type that you and Logan answer. So I got a weird hypothetical for you guys as Commanders fans. He says, if the Commanders and Eagles completely switched rosters, coaches, front office, etc., which team would you support? I couldn't even support the Eagles, but I love our players so much. I'm stuck. Now, different ball of wax for you because you'd still be working at the park, you know, wearing a Commanders polo or whatever. But separate that part of it for a second. You're just a fan, okay? So now all the Commanders, coaches, players, like everyone in the building is on the Eagles and vice versa. Who's the right team to root for?
Dude, I'd have to root for the guys. I have to root for the boys. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've been here.
But you're going to root for the Eagles?
Yeah, I'm going to do that. Because, this is a player thing. This is for sure a player thing. So I'm going to, because there is such a, gunslinger, free agent mentality to the league. Like, so when I would leave a team, I would still root for my guys on the team that I liked. You know, I'd go check in. When I was in Atlanta, one of the guys got traded and I watched every one of his snaps for the whole season just to kind of make. And so I became a fan of New England because my buddy was on that team. Right. So to me, I love these players. I love Jeremy Reeves. Right. I want to see Sonny Styles do well. I love Frankie Louvu. I root for the player. I'm more. And this probably goes back to my upbringing. I grew up in L.A. when there was no football team there. So I would follow certain players. I'd follow, you know what I'm saying? So it's different
That's the player in you, to your point, which you said. So it's funny. As a media member, right? I'm going to answer the question. I'll be the fan on the podcast, if you will. I don't always answer questions that way because I don't see the world that way really anymore. It's not to say I don't root for the team or want them to win. But as soon as you're on a beat, you know, it just changes forever. And I could still be a diehard fan of the Capitals. You know, I've never covered them really. I was on a beat. I was around it every day. It just changes your fandom forever. So I say that to say I'm more about players too. When Alfred Morris was here and I'm like, I'd my sister marry this guy. And then he goes and plays for San Francisco or Dallas. And I turn on the TV. I want Alfred to rip off a run.
Yeah. Let's get it. Let's do it, boys. You know,
exactly. Yeah. So I root for people in this business. Sean McVay is one of my favorite. I still keep texting him this week. There are guys that I am still Kyle. I want to win a Super Bowl badly. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people like that in the industry that were good to me, that helped me, that I learned from, or just that I like, that are good human beings. So that's how I view it as well, to be clear. And it gets me in trouble sometimes. I mean, I've got, you know, fan blogs out the wazoo, mad because I complimented Drake May because I like watching Drake May play football. I think it's fun. He's awesome.
Just totally fair, man. He's good.
If you're a crazy fan who acts like you're 6 years old, then everything that you say positive about anyone not named Jaden Daniels is unacceptable, how my 5-year-old thinks, by the way. So grow up and be an adult. But so that's another story for another time.
To support you real quick, I don't want you to keep your train of thought. I was watching, I had to do a cut up of Stephon Diggs. He was obviously in New England with Drake May last year. Yeah. And I was like, this dude can rip it, man. And so I showed the cut ups to Tanner, and he's like, man, this dude's a baller. And it's okay to like good ball.
Be careful.
I know, but I'm saying it's okay
people
to like good
will hate
ball.
You. Be careful.
I'm not saying he's, for a long time. I'm not saying he's better or worse than Jaden Daniels. No, I'm just careful. Saying.
In 4 years, people are going to be mad that you complimented Drake May. I thought this way when I was 8 years old, and then, you know, I grew up. I don't understand how people, you just said something nice about Caleb Williams. Shut up, 4-year-old. I'll never understand it. But anyway, so I just view the world differently at this point. Yeah. I watch ball and I'm like, oh my God, that is a dime. That's the kind of player I like. You know what I'm saying? And oh, by the way, no one cares that it's if Jaden Daniels was on the Bengals, I'd be watching him going, I love this dude. What a worker. What a grinder. What a play. How did you see that play against the Browns where he breaks out to the right and flicks his wrist for 60 yards? But regardless, that's another soapbox for another time. That having been said, I'm going to do the fan answer here. I think if you're a fan, which is what this guy's talking about, I think you need to then – the answer is the Commanders.
Really? Just bump it?
Yeah. It's about the shield, bro. I mean, like if you trade,
because you're a fan of the team, like you're a fan of the
yeah. Players come and go. I've been here since I was knee high to a grasshopper. When I was 6 years old, I'm asking my mom for Redskins stuff, right?
Yeah.
When it's Christmas time, I send a letter to Santa. Hey, Santa, I'll have milk and cookies ready. I want anything you can find me Redskins at the North Pole. Bring it over. Like every year, that was my list from when I was 5 to when I was 12, back when I used to get angry when people complimented other players, by the way, which is the age that you should be offended by people complimenting other players. But anyway, like that was my whole childhood, my guy. So in this hypothetical, I'm not a big Jalen Hurts guy as a passer. He's a great football player.
Yeah,
I'm into Hurts now, you know, like, come on over. Saquon Barkley is my RB1. I think it's about the squad. Like, coaches come and go. This was my annoyance. I'm on another soapbox now. When they changed the name and it was like Jason Wright, who was a passerby that was here for 9 seconds and would be like using buzzwords for some like, I don't know, women's soccer team 2 years later or wherever he was headed. And Ron Rivera, who was here for 3 minutes, like kicking my team name and stuff. Like, no. I'm living with this for the next 50 years.
It's a good point.
My kids are going to have this their whole life. Like, why are you guys making this decision for me? I'm always going to be here. Yeah. So I think that's my answer is, if you're a fan, you could definitely root for your guy. Like, you're never going to root against Terry McLaurin. But you're not an Eagles fan all of a sudden. You're a Commanders fan.
That's a good way. That's a good framing. I like that because it's the banner. It's the shield, right? That's what you're in there for. And you've been there. And that's an interesting perspective because I didn't have a team. Like, you know, like in LA, there's no team. And now there's a bunch of teams. But at the time, so you had kind of like follow guys. And so I never have been exposed to, since I was 5 years old, having the same thing on TV every Sunday, which I'm sure is very impactful. And so, yeah, I guess that makes a lot of sense to me.
1 o'clock on Sunday is for Redskins football.
Yeah.
That's what it's not, you know, it's football time and it's burgundy and it's gold. You could change the name. You could change the colors, although they're finally back, which is nice. You could change the colors and tell me you didn't change the colors. You could do all that stuff.
But you're in.
That's my squad.
So I guess if you change the whole team, boom, boom.
Yeah. Who is it? Is it the Redskins? Then let's go. If there's an expansion draft in the NFL this year, you're not just picking a new team. The Washington Commanders are still here. That's your squad.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Hey, learn something. I think I like that. I like that.
That's a good question, though. I mean, it was kind of fun. I like that outside the box. All right. That'll end the week for Take Command. Hopefully that wasn't too we wasn't too spicy or too saucy there. I you know you got a little passion out of your boy there at the end.
I like it though. That's when you're at your best, man. Just sports,
just shooting from the hip.
Just hey, bang bang.
You don't want me turned all the way up to 10, where like the occasional like I'll start yelling, but like I'd say like 6, where I'm feeling a little something. That's when you're going to get the good stuff.
So usually you're pretty good on this show, but sometimes we'll talk offline and I can feel it coming. You're not there yet, but I can feel it kind of brewing. And I'm like, uh-oh, the big dog is upset about something.
I scream like, I hate people that just scream all the time because I think you lose your fastball. Like if a coach screams all the time, it never matters when they scream.
Doesn't resonate, right? Yeah.
I think radio's the same way. And so I try to never really scream so that people know when I'm actually mad. And it's not like cognizant, but it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And like a couple weeks ago, I just lost. I almost broke my hand and I slammed the table. Yeah. I because they don't do anything ever in the preseason or training camp. And I was so mad about it. And I just started screaming, play football. Football players play football. And I just started slamming the table over and over again at the top of my lungs. And I almost broke my hand. Like, it was so embarrassing.
That's probably like, too much, but.
Exactly. And so you look back at it, like, after you're calm and, like, 10 minutes later, you're like, God, that's really embarrassing, you know? But, like, yeah, man, the needle starts going and it's like, wait a second. Last year you chose to do nothing and you went 5-12 and you're doing the same bit again. And I just start losing my mind. It's just like, let's just wait till they play football. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine.
Everything's gonna be fine. Yeah, here we are in your couch session. Everything's gonna be fine. Don't worry about it. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, I coach, and so when I coach, sometimes I don't normally yell, but sometimes I'll get over my skis a little bit. And I'm like, why'd I do that? Didn't love that.
Yeah,
for
you're
me
like, I want that one back.
Yeah,
I want. I'm gonna have to find the video. Someone's got it, I'm sure, of me going like, play football. Football players play football. Just like hitting the table. All right. Take command. That'll do it for now. Let's calm back down. Week one. Let's get into week one mode. Philadelphia Eagles hosting the Commanders next Sunday. For Logan, behind the scenes production as well. We had a crew of multiple folks helping us out today. Our guy Evan was on travel. Thank you guys for listening. This has been Take Command.